In a world where there is a scourge across the land, taking the very life breath of the people. A world rife with snoring. One man and one show stand tall in the battle against sleep apnea. That man is Richard Webb. That show is the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show. And the time is now.
Wake up, America. Wake up. CPAP Sleep Specialist Show here on 1560. I'm your host, Richard Webb. And in studio with me this morning is Dr. Thomas Speer. Good morning, Dr. Speer.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
Dr. Speer is an American Academy of Sleep Medicine doctor and specialized in sleep problems, sleep disorders, interpreting sleep studies. Not sleep dreams. I don't think you've studied too much the meanings of dreams, but your expertise goes way back many years. I think between the two of us, we have many years. I don't want to think about how many years of what we've been seeing people that have sleep disorders. You know, when you and I started 20 plus years ago, I think that the typical sleep apnea patient was the overweight guy, the sedentary couch potato that had a big neck that sort of fell asleep wherever he was. And that was what we thought everybody was until sleep studies began on different people. And we saw that everybody has a little bit of sleep disorder, and a lot of people have a lot of sleep disorder.
That'd be true, in that it's not only the overweight male, it's men and women, and now we're finding clinically significant. In other words, it harms you all the way down to children.
Because you're right. Because we used to think that obstructive sleep apnea primarily just nudged you and woke you up, and you felt crappy the next day. But we know now there are so many problems associated with obstructive sleep apnea, and whether it involves your blood pressure, your cholesterol, your sex life, your heart disease, all these things are tightly affiliated with every. Anytime somebody tells me they're having a problem, I say, "Do you snore?" That's the first question I say to them. "Do you snore?" And they go, "Well, yeah, of course." And I say, "Well, anybody ever tell you stop breathing?" I went, "Well, yeah. My husband doesn't sleep with me anymore." And I say, "Well, have you ever been tested for sleep disorder? Maybe that contributes to your high blood pressure." No. There's no way. No way can that be the case.
And it's amazing that you ask it so quickly, the question, do you snore? And many of the physicians that people see, that question doesn't rise up to their consciousness to ask it as frequently as they ought to. It's much better than it was when we started, but it certainly is not as prevalent as it ought to be, considering the presence and really the consequences of untreated sleep-disordered breathing.
Well, today we're talking about a number of things, and Dr. Speer has kindly agreed to spend some time talking about auto-adjusting devices. Auto-sets is what a lot of the industry refers to them as here on the CPAP show. But Dr. Speer, before we get too much into the program, I do want to thank our sponsors. ResMed has been advertising the Skinit, and the Skinit is a unique product that labels the machine as your own specialty device, whether it's pictures of your grandkids or it's a picture of the Tennessee Titans, who might get Peyton Manning today or so. A lot of people might put a picture of their dog on it, I think they're the only company that presently does the specialization of the exterior skin on that. And our other sponsor is Plastiflex, and Plastiflex is a maker of tubing, all kinds of tubing, and the one that we specifically promote here is the Hibernite tubing, which is a tubing that warms the air and keeps the humidity at a higher level so that you do better on your CPAP and you don't get congested and have problems and actually have a not have adequate treatment from your positive air pressure. So before we get too in-depth, we were just alluding to the TSA. And one of the things that I always want to remind people of when they do travel in the airport, of course, is when you go through the lines at airport, they always ask you to take out your computers, any type of laptops. I think recently they told me to take out my GPS. They thought it was a computer. But they always tell you to take out your CPAP device, which is a TSA requirement. And it is allowed to ask the TSA agent if they're going to touch your equipment. It is permitted to ask the TSA agent to change their plastic gloves. Their plastic gloves that they wear are very nasty. They've touched every bag and people's underwear. And so it's a good idea before they, if they want to inspect your equipment, to change that out.
Interesting.
It is, if you think about what, you know, how nasty the stuff that if you can see it on their gloves, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. So, Dr. Spear, without getting too far off track today, I want you to discuss what would we generally refer to as normal sleep. And, of course, after we talk about normal, we're going to kind of move into abnormal sleep. But what is the general classification of normal sleep, numbers of hours, how deep we get, REM? What is normal sleep?
That's a good question. And that we have been debating for some time the total time of sleep. But generally speaking, based on large samples of people being studied, based on other consequences of if you don't, you should sleep between 6 and 9 hours a night, which comes down to the most preferable is about 8 hours. Most people tell me they don't make it to the 8 hour mark. But the point is, between 6 and 9 is the total sleep time that one should look to achieve. The question then becomes, if you sleep 6 hours a night during the week and then you sleep 8 or 9 hours on the weekend, do you catch up? And just do the math, and basically you don't. Sleep loss is accumulative. So the more deprived you get, the more sleepy you become. And after a while, you start to consider that normal. So first of all, is to get adequate amount of sleep. And like I said, you know, closer to 8 is better than closer to 6. When we fall asleep, we typically see people fall asleep in, let's say, 15 minutes. Now, 15 minutes from what? 15 minutes from the time that you roll over, get comfortable, the lights are out, and you try to go to sleep. That's a normal latency or sleep onset time. And then during the first 90 minutes, if you will, you start drifting from light sleep to what we call stage 2 sleep, which is where we spend half the night. And then we slip into deep sleep, what we call slow wave sleep or stage 3 sleep. And that takes about 90 minutes, 75 to 90 minutes, sometimes a little longer, depending on a lot of other things. And then we go into our first REM sleep, commonly referred to as dreaming sleep. And we spend maybe 20 minutes there, and then we then go back into what we call non-REM sleep, and we go into like stage 2, maybe a little bit of slow wave sleep, and then another REM period. So we'd like to see people get 3 to 4 REM periods a night. It all depends on how long you stay asleep, how many REM periods you're going to have. And as the night progresses, the REM sleeps get longer, especially the last third of the night, you spend the preponderance of that period in dreaming sleep, REM sleep. Now, the first third of the night, you spend the preponderance of that time in slow wave sleep if you're younger. As we age, the ability to get into that slow wave sleep diminishes, especially once we get into the sixth and seventh decade of life. So there's this oscillation between non-REM and REM sleep 3 to 4 times a night, and we may have typically 1 or 2 awakenings. Awakenings different than an arousal. Awakenings where you might get up and go to the bathroom. You might be aware of the time or be aware of something, and you go back to sleep relatively quickly. What's quickly? Again, less than 5-10 minutes. Now, there are things called arousals, which are this speeding up of the EEG, or the brain is aroused and the nervous system is aroused and the heart rate picks up and the breathing pattern changes. You're unaware of those, but those are the ones that causes the most disruption of sleep. And that's when things now, We don't typically see that in normal sleeps very frequently, but as the night, as one ages or one has pain or one has stress, one has sleep apnea, it becomes more disruptive. So it's an oscillation. You basically have three ways. You're awake, you're in non-REM sleep, and you're in REM sleep, the three states of existence of the human body. And we spend, like many have said, as much as a third of the day in sleep. And so normal sleep should take about 8 hours.
So when you hit that first REM sleep, you're saying it takes anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours?
90 minutes to an hour. 90 minutes to 100 minutes, an hour and a half.
Okay. So it should take about 90 minutes to get into your first dream sleep, which is that deeper sleep, because there's many stages of sleep where it's not just REM and non-REM. There's many stages of sleep, but the one that we most concern ourselves with is whether or not you get into that deep REM sleep. And REM is associated with dreaming, right?
Right.
Am I consolidating that well?
Well, I would. It's always what you discern as being deep sleep. Deep sleep where you're not hard to arouse, and when you wake up, you have a little trouble knowing what's going on around you, and you don't hear things and things like that. Is what we call slow wave sleep or stage N3 sleep. And so really there's light sleep, stage 2 sleep, where we spend half the time, and then we spend some time in deep sleep. REM sleep is a completely different kind of sleep than slow wave sleep, in that our brain is very active, it's burning glucose, it's organizing things, you can have very vivid imagery, and we our bodies are essentially paralyzed.
Excellent explanation. This is the CPAP Show. I'm your host, Richard Webb, here on 1560. Give us a call, 713-439-1560. We'll be back after this break. Show. You're on 1560. Give us a call, 713-439-1560. We do take your questions off air. If you want to email them to us at the CPAP Show at monitormedical.com. I'm your host, Richard Webb. In studio this morning with me is Dr. Thomas Spear. And if you missed the last segment, we were talking about normal sleep, slow wave sleep, REM, what it is to be in and out of sleep. And if you want to get your fill of our radio station broadcast, you can go to the monitormedical.com website and click on the CPAP Show, and you can listen to the prior broadcasts. We have them up there, and our IT guys have done a great job on posting this in iTunes, so you can actually download it on your iPad, iPod, cell phone, and listen to the past broadcasts. We've got tons of information out there with people with sleep disorders. So we were talking about normal sleep, Dr. Spear. Let's graduate to abnormal sleep. What is abnormal sleep? And then the second question that ties into that is how is it that obstructive sleep apnea gives you abnormal sleep?
Abnormal sleep is, I think, there's a great deal of variety of what that means. And one of the things to consider when we have, for the past two, three decades, have looked at the EEG as a description of the quality and the continuity of sleep, which means how well did you sleep and did you go in non-REM and REM sleep, as we spoke about. The difficulty when you start talking about sleep disorder breathing is that we then focus on the respiratory patterns and the pauses in breathing and the changes in heart rate and the changes in oxygen level. And sometimes we move away from the disruption of the sleep architecture or the quality of the sleep. But what tends to be the problem when you have a pause in breathing where the airway is collapsing or closing off, so you're not able to move air through your nose and mouth, and so you have a buildup of need to breathe, if you will, and the brain is aroused, not awakened, aroused. So it goes to a lighter stage of sleep, and there's renewed muscle tone to the upper airway, so you take a deep breath. Now, when that occurs, it's almost like a flight or fight response. where the heart rate will go up, the blood pressure will go up, the respiratory rate will go up to if you will, ventilate or bring fresh air to the lungs that can then exchange it in oxygen into the blood, and then the body is, okay, thank you very much for allowing me to breathe again. Now we're breathing, sleeping again. And if that occurs, if it's the rapidity of that, the amount of times that occurs in a night, it happens to everybody to some degree or another every night. It's the frequency and the effect it has on, if you will, the breathing pattern, the sleeping pattern, and the heart rate that makes it become abnormal. And we have a kind of a rule of thumb, and that's about all it is, that if you have more than five of these apneas and hypopneas, a partial apnea, per hour of sleep, that's considered abnormal. Now, we have a lot of definitions on what that means to have an apnea or hypopnea, and I don't think that is what the audience is as much interested in, is that it's the repetitiveness of it. How frequently does it occur? It may happen a lot more on a Friday night or a Saturday night than it does on Monday or Tuesday night. We know that sleep deprivation, which we talked about at the beginning of the hour, can lead to the brain to be less able to arouse itself to breathe, so apneas can last longer and have more significance. So by maintaining adequate total sleep time, you can in many ways improve any sleep disorder breathing you might have, even your snoring. We know the more fatigued we are as we go to sleep, the more likely we are to snore. If we have alcohol or anything else that's sedating, that will further allow not only the muscles to relax, but mainly it blunts the arousal mechanism and makes us breathe.
It's always funny when I tell people that if they drink alcohol late at night, that it actually worsens their sleep. People feel it makes them drowsy. People associate drowsy with sleeping, but alcohol actually worsens your sleep, and not unlike caffeine, like some Cokes or iced tea late at night.
That's true. It you have to think of the time it takes for the caffeine or the alcohol to get into your blood system to affect it. Alcohol will arouse you later on in tonight, but yeah, it has a sedating quality when you drink it. But if you wake up two or three hours into the night, it could be contributory by the alcohol. Caffeine's the same way. Many people say, well, I drink caffeine all day in my coffee or my Cokes. It doesn't bother my sleep. Until if you could show them their sleep through an EEG pattern, they could see that it does affect their sleep. It's just they've come to understand that that is their normal, and that is not as restorative as it could be.
You know, I know if I exercise too late in the day or if I eat too late in the day, I'll have a horrible sleep. I have that interrupted sleep. It may not be obstructive sleep apnea, but it has the same effect because I'm having those arousal phases and not falling and staying asleep.
Right. Your body is trying to do something else. It's trying to process the food, and the exercise, it will, in many ways, it's very relaxing after you get done with the exercise, but 2-3 hours later when you're trying to fall asleep.
And your joints are hurting. And as you get older, once you get to be in the age where your body doesn't heal so fast, I can't imagine how an NFL player who gets banged and beaten sleeps at night because they're dog tired, but they're in physical discomfort that too will cause them to waken.
Pain is a very common complaint of people that say, I don't sleep well, and their legs will ache or their back will hurt, and let's put it this way, sleep apnea is worse on your back, or your snoring is worse on your back. And so many people say, well, I don't sleep on my back because my back hurts. And so they think they're somehow protected, where in fact, that's just where it starts.
Why do most people end up on their back when they're snoring so loudly if it's such a disquieting mechanism? What causes you to flop out on your back? Is it? I've always associated with that was the easiest way to open your mouth as wide as it can get, which causes you to snore as loud as you get.
I think you make a good point there, that it's the body does well sleeping on the back. It reduces some pressure points, and it has a level of comfort. And like you said, if you extend your neck out over your pillow or over the side of the bed and hyperextend your neck and tilt your head back, you open your airway and you can breathe. And we always move in different positions all night long. People say they go to bed, wake up in the same position.
Right.
if I've seen too many sleep studies where we put body position monitors on and we see them change all night long. So I've never seen anybody really, and I shouldn't say never. It's not very common you see somebody stay in one position, other than if they're forced to because of some disability.
Mm-hmm. Do you still see the old tennis shoe in the back, where many, many years ago doctors would suggest if you have bad snoring to sew a tennis ball into the base of the shirt so that it's very uncomfortable to lay on your back?
Yes, we still refer to that as a possibility. One of the problems we found with that, it's so uncomfortable to roll over on those balls
right.
as it wakes you up anyway. So yeah. But the key, there are pillows you can use. There are devices you can stuff, more of a tube-like mm-hmm. Foam device you can put in the back of your shirt. But sometimes positional keeping off your back can keep you away from a CPAP machine for a while. But I've never been that successful over months and years of somebody using a positional device, just because it is uncomfortable.
713-439-1560 with your questions regarding sleep disorders and CPAP. I'm Richard Webb, and in studio this morning is Dr. Thomas Spear, and we're talking about normal sleep, abnormal sleep, the term of awakening versus arousal at night. That's an interesting differentiation, because a lot of people notice that they don't wake up at all at night. They go to bed and they sleep all night and they think that they're fine. But on study afterwards, we see that they, if you want to classify an arousal as a type of awakening, or it's a coming up out of that REM stage sleep, that they come up and they're exhausted in the morning, even after sleeping all those hours. For those people who were in their 50s and 60s and they feel like I can't sleep more than 5 or 6 hours, what are they supposed to do? You know, you hear that so often people stop sleeping together when they're married because they become very light sleepers, and they find that they can't stay asleep. They go to bed, they're tired when they go to bed, they're tired when they wake up. Is there anything that they can do?
There's a lot of things people can do to look at their basic sleep behaviors. Some people refer to as sleep hygiene. If you're unable, in your opinion, you can't sleep beyond 5 hours, try to answer what wakes you up. If it's pain, if it's sounds, if it's light, if it's the bed partner, if it's somebody else in the house, or a pet, if you will, who has to get up. There are explanations, if you will, as to what contributes and what some way exacerbates or makes it worse. That you look at those things. The environment's very important. If you have a TV on or if you have lights on, that will shorten sleep time. If you are on certain medications, many medications will disrupt the quality of sleep. For instance, as we've been talking about REM sleep, many medications out there will suppress or delay the presence of REM sleep in the night, to the point that some people don't even get that because of the medication. Now, that tends to affect how we feel during the day. It affects sometimes on how long we sleep, because that medication is interfering with the brain's ability to really restore itself, and the body as well. So I think you got to look at the medication, you got to look at your environment, and also, are you napping? Are you sleeping irregular hours? I mean, shift workers that try to sleep during the day typically sleep an hour and a half less than the person who sleeps during the nocturnal phase of the 24 hours.
You hear a lot about melatonin as being one of the natural things because the body produces a small amount of it. Do you see that, a lot of people taking melatonin, and have you noticed any associated issues with melatonin?
Melatonin is not so much a sleep aid as an aid to one's internal body's clock. And if that is necessary, it works well some of the time. It's depending on when you take it and how much you take it.
713-439-1560. After this break, we're going to come back and talk about auto-adjusting CPAP devices. Be back. Welcome back to the Adele CPAP Show. I'm your host, Richard Webb, here on the CPAP Show. My guest in studio this morning is Dr. Thomas Speer, and we're talking about sleep disorders. And we've been talking about normal and abnormal sleep in the last few segments, and we ended it up by bringing up melatonin. Feel free to give us a call, 713-439-1560, or email us your questions. I did get one here, emailed to the CPAP Show at monitormedical.com. This individual writes, "Why would I still feel tired after wearing my CPAP every night? I've not been to see a doctor in about a year. Do I need to make an appointment or have my machine adjusted?" Dr. Speer, hit that one for me.
I would say,
why do I still feel tired after wearing my CPAP?
Probably not everything is quite adjusted yet. The first question that you'll look at is the mask comfortable? Yeah, it seems like the mask is focused so much of the success of the CPAP machine. And then you look at pressure and also how long did you use it? I mean, how long, if you're only wearing it 2 or 3 hours a night, you probably are still going to feel tired. We start to see the kinds of alertness and improvement in how one feels and throughout the day is when people are able to break the six and a half hour mark of using it. I think those are some of the things that one has to look at. The things we talked about earlier with regard to positive behaviors and sleep, making sure the environment's comfortable, make sure you have adequate humidification, like the heated wall tubing that you mentioned earlier can improve the ability for the person to breathe. It reduces the effort, if you will, by making the nose more patent, if you will. What we say is it's easier to breathe through your nose when it's proper humidification and proper temperature. So I think there are some things that need to be adjusted. And just because we come up with a pressure based on a sleep study or decided on the type of blower device that you use, there's a fair amount of adjustment. And after you adjust to it, then you have to make some changes. It may, like I said, the mask, the pressure, and the usage. How much do you use it? And one of the things that we've assessed over the years is that people that have sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea, that even after treatment, that they still are able to fall asleep quicker than the person without it.
Mm-hmm.
But their ability to stay awake has improved dramatically. That's two different ideas of the brain. If you give the brain a chance to fall asleep, they may still be sleepy in that percent. But if you get them in a situation where they now have the ability to stay awake, it's a different function of the brain. So we improve one, not necessarily always the other. So you also have to look at weight. You have to look at level of activity during the day, total sleep time, things of that nature. Even mood, depression is very common with people with sleep apnea. And if depression is not adequately treated, sometimes you feel that tired feeling. And even though you're being adequately treated for the obstructive sleep apnea, you may be depressed. Or like we said, if you have carrying excessive weight, that'll wear you out. So there's other causes of sleepiness other than just sleep apnea. So call your doctor and work on some adjustments, I think, would be the first thing. Because we have to think of it as a chronic problem. It's like our glasses. We don't get our first set of glasses and keep those lenses for very long before we need to have those adjusted.
When somebody tells me they're not doing well, I ask them, first question I say, when you first got your CPAP machine and your mask, did you do well for a while? Did you have good results for a while? And if they answer that yes, the second question is how long has it been since you replaced your mask? And if the person says they've never replaced their mask, and we've always, at Monitor Medical, we're big advocates of a regular replacement schedule for the components of the mask. People look at their mask and say, well, it's not broken. It's not ripped in half. It's not coming apart. But the basic features of the masks that they currently make, they're engineering marvels, if you will, of they're expanding just so, they're air inflated just so, the headgear stretches just to a certain amount, And over time, all these elastic features of the mask and headgear start to wane. And when that happens, people in general tend to tighten their mask progressively, more and more tight, to the point where the features of the mask fail to live up to what their original design is. So if somebody's not doing well initially with a mask, I'm sorry, is doing well initially with a mask, and over time starts having problems with nothing else changing, I always tell them there's probably something wrong with the product.
That's true. And I think you make an excellent point that we oftentimes forget about is that headgear.
The headgear. And also in women, there's hormonal changes throughout their life. And we find that as women get postmenopausal, they have changes in regards to certain estrogen, testosterone levels. And that, too, seems to have a non-beneficial effect on the sleeping pattern, if nothing else changes.
Yes. Hormonal changes, aging, all has a significant impact on sleep, and therefore changes one has to make in the delivery of the therapy of positive airway pressure.
We mentioned that we're going to talk a little bit about autos. CPAP stands for continuous positive air pressure, CPAP. A lot of people come in, don't know what that stands for, continuous positive air pressure, CPAP. And one of the advents of positive air pressure therapy was a number of years ago, some of the companies started adjusting the machines so that they would change their pressures throughout the night automatically. It automatically sets its pressure, not totally unlike a cruise control on the car that allows the engine to speed up and slow down to achieve a goal. And your feeling on auto-adjusting devices, Dr. Spear, I mean, what have you seen over the course? They've gotten much better at monitoring how you do. They, in a way, they're sort of like a miniature sleep study that monitors your every breath.
That's true, and we've been working with these fairly actively since 1996, 1997, I think, when we first saw these come onto the market. The ones that actually worked. There's a few that were precursors that tried to use some variables that did not really help much. But now that that they're using the, if you will, what we call measuring the flow coming out of the box and the resistance it receives, we call it flow limitation, or we call it just it on every fifth breath or every so many breaths, it is averaging to make sure that they're getting adequate flow, which is what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure you can breathe through the night as you sleep. And as that changes, it'll has an algorithm, or it has a set time frame that it increases the pressure, and then it'll slowly decrease the pressure based on how things are going. These are very, very intelligent devices. But one of the things that it takes more time sometimes to decide how to deliver that, because they have a range of pressure that they give us, so we can start at one pressure and then can go as high as another pressure. Sometimes that is either too much or it starts too low, so you sometimes need to adjust that in or adjust that that bracket of pressure so you find the sweet spot, if you will. And that takes some time, and that takes some interest in making sure that you're getting what you need. And the information that those devices give us, like you said, it's like a mini study. Every night we know an awful lot of information. And if you look at that trend over time, you can make some very subtle adjustments that improve the response you're getting. Now, still most of the people out there are using what we call fixed pressure devices, where it's set at a number and it stays at that number. There may be some adjustments as you're going to sleep. It might start low, what we call ramp. They may use something like Biflex or expiratory pressure release. Those are symptomatic ways to improve one's adjustment as they're falling asleep and sustaining sleep. The auto-titrating devices are very different in that they move throughout a range. And why it hasn't been accepted by more across the field is a question that maybe the manufacturer could answer. But I've been quite acquainted with it and used a fair amount of them throughout most of the last 15 years.
Auto-adjusting CPAPs continue to develop. And we have a caller this morning. Good morning. Is that Joan?
No, sir. This is Juan.
Juan, I apologize. Good morning, Juan.
It's okay. I've been listening to your show, and I've been on a CPAP for about 10 years. I've been through about three different styles. The first one I remember I was on, it was made by, I believe, Fisher-Paykel. And then I moved to Respironics, but now my doctor has recommended a particular machine called the ResMed. So I was wondering, what is the difference between the three, and why would one be better than the other?
All the manufacturers now have come up with auto-adjusting machines. And, Dr. Spree, you mentioned briefly the algorithm that the device used. And I always think of that fancy word algorithm. It's not a mathematical thing as much as it's sort of like a software program that the manufacturer wrote. And under these circumstances, these things happened. You mentioned flow limitation, that when the machines detect a difficulty in breathing or you're trying to breathe and nothing's happening, the different machines have tendency to have a different response rate. Was the Fisher-Paykel that you had, was that an auto or was that a fixed CPAP?
Well, my original pressure was 16. Since then, I've gone up to about a pressure of 18, I believe. And I hear you guys talking about auto, and I was wondering because it seems like I can wear a full face mask. It's the only mask that would work for this type of pressure. I've tried three or four different styles. But closer towards the end of the night, it seems like my wife is, telling me there's these loud noises, and I'm not sure if it's maybe the pressure. So I'm wondering if possibly this auto may be something that that may benefit me, or if there's any other thing I can do to kind of eliminate all these leaks that I hear about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, your pressure is something that the physician ordered, and if the physician orders an auto adjusting. With whatever range, we can set that pressure to hopefully take care of the leaks and the high pressure. The reason the leaks is because your mask is most likely not fitting properly on your face. That's what's causing the noises late into the morning.
Are you aware there's another device called a bi-level or a BiPAP? Do you know
BiPAP?
Since you're at high pressures, 18 is high. And if you were on a bi-level pressure, you'd be breathing in on one pressure and breathing out on another. And so sometimes you can make it more comfortable for you, and the mask can tend to respond better with that. So different manufacturers offer you offers the physician different ways to manage that higher pressure. So be conscious of changing that mask and maybe auto bi-level. Or even out there.
713-439-1560. We'll come back in a minute to talk more about auto. This is the CPAP show. You're on 1560, 713-439-1560. We're in the last segment of the show this morning talking about CPAP, sleep disorders, and auto-adjusting devices. And Juan in the last caller had asked about his mask pressure causing a leaking at several hours into the mask and into wearing his device, and probably due to the fact that after several hours, he's laying in a certain position in the bed. And a lot of times in that sleep, and we talked about in the beginning of the show, the difference between an arousal and an awakening. And a lot of times people wake up and adjust their mask and don't even know that they're adjusting their mask. Or they loosen their mask and don't even recall that they've loosened their mask. Another common problem that we see is a improperly fit mask. I can't tell you how many 6'3" guys that come in and all their lives, everything they bought was extra large, 2XL. And so they come in and say, I need an extra large mask. And one of the things that we have to do is to convince that person that just because they're 6'4", 6'6", 280 pounds, that their nose and their face is not extra large. I mean, what God gave them from head to toe is extra long, but that shape of their nose is not. And a lot of pap masks will tend to go to the lowest place on the face. They tend to sort of, over time, as you're adjusting your face and wrinkling your nose, they tend to work their way down. And so you have to get a mask that's fitting properly so that it survives the whole night. And as perhaps Jay, what Juan had called about was the mask giving him problems, I didn't inquire how long he'd had that mask, because that too is a symptom of a mask that's too old, that the situation is that it leaks a lot more. Again, you look at the mask and there's nothing wrong with it, but it's been worn, it's been smashed, it's been stretched, it's been washed. It has the heat of the body, the sweat of the body. You know, we perspire all night long. Most people don't realize it. And so the mask just fits too improperly. So Dr. Spear, would an auto-adjusting device have helped that person? Or is I think it would at least be a consideration, because he was having trouble at the higher pressures. And his doctor, sometimes they just keep going higher and higher and higher, and higher is not always better.
That's correct. And when you think about higher, when you need that higher pressure, it's in REM sleep on your back.
Mm-hmm.
And at most, people spend 15% in REM sleep on their back. So the other 85% of the night, you probably need less, not more.
I have seen, and I haven't seen any studies to explain this, I have seen people that have been on CPAP, like this person that called in, and they have a relatively high pressure. And sometimes they get on an auto-adjusting device, and over time, it almost appears that the predominance of the night is at a much lower positive air pressure. And they can't believe it themselves. I had it was a physician patient recently that he wanted to turn the pressure up. And I said, you know, you're on an auto-adjusting device from 15, it was already at a base of 15 centimeters of pressure. But all night long, he was on at 15. And I suggested, he wanted to turn it up. I said, you need to turn it down, because you're always, all night long, staying at the lowest pressure the machine is set at. So I suggested turning it down to 13, which we did. And he came back, and guess what? Now the machine is almost all night long at 13. So I think over time, he has learned to improve his breathing pattern, and the pressure that occasionally went high was helpful, but most of the night long, he needed a much lower pressure.
That is often true, and those pressure changes that, you know, were really set for the correcting it at, like I said, in REM sleep on their back in the worst situation. And so, and people will adapt either to that higher pressure, or they'll adapt by not wearing it. So too much pressure is as bad as too little pressure. I think that if you don't have enough pressure and you're really working at breathing, and if you turn the pressure up slightly, you do better. And so you have to find that range or that pressure that's optimal.
What about people who get auto CPAPs instead of getting a sleep study and a CPAP device? And I know physicians like to see the results of the patient before and after treatment. But what about the guy who doesn't want to go through the sleep study? Is there a segment of the population that can go directly to an auto adjusting CPAP?
That's a good question. If you do go that route, make sure you're working with a physician that will work through you through that first couple weeks, a couple months, because there's some adjustment need to be made. And you don't get that adjustment just by setting it wide open, as we say.
And you still need a prescription.
That's true.
And being in the business, I can tell you that most insurance companies will not pay for that device if you have not had a sleep study. Not all of them, but many of them will not pay. Medicare, many commercial insurances will not pay for the device if you haven't had a sleep study to show that you're actually doing better. Another question we have is the guy who has trouble wearing it all night long, if he only wears his PAP device for 3 or 4 hours a night, does he still get benefit?
You get benefit by using it. So any amount of use is better than none. But it's not, you're not going to get the benefits of correcting some of the, what we say, the other disease entities, if you don't wear it probably greater than 6 hours.
You're listening to the CPAP show. We're finished up another hour. I'm your host, Richard Webb. My guest in studio today is Dr. Thomas Speer. And if you want to listen to archived shows of prior CPAP shows, go to the monitormedical.com website. Click on CPAP show and you'll be able to listen live to the listen to pre-recorded versions, and you can also listen to iTunes. And you can send us your questions during the week to the CPAP show at monitormedical.com. We'll see you next Sunday morning at 9 o'clock Central here on 1560 The Game.